Operation Encore is a 501c nonprofit that is helping veterans turn into rock stars every single day. You can learn more about what Operation Encore is doing by going over to their website at www.operationencore.org. That is www.operationencore.org. If you can give them a hand, just click that little donate button or follow all of their social medias and learn exactly what they are doing to change the lives of our veterans every single day. Hey, welcome everybody to Drunk Dudes in a Gun Room. Man, oh man, I am telling you what, it feels good to be back on the air and enjoying life. Today we have got a fascinating guest. It is Christoph Marl, Navy veteran, author of The Second Son, and award-winning journalist, photographer. Let's bring on Christoph Marl. How's it going, man?
Good afternoon.
How you doing, Donnie? Good, man. Yourself? So let me ask you a question, man. What brought you to the Navy?
Oh, a little bit of poverty and a little bit of recklessness. I honestly wanted to, so many things, really. Kind of a fascination started when I was a kid. I saw that movie. This might sound cheesy to other people, but I was a kid and I saw that movie Saving Private Ryan. And when you see the corpsman running through, like, on the beaches of Normandy, to, like, back towards the hedgehogs, away from, like, safety, to, like, provide care, you know, rescue care to a downed soldier. Like, that was, I just thought that was a really incredible thing. So I thought that was really, I saw then and understood that there was a thing that we call valor. You know, yeah. I didn't know that. Like, that was, it was a real, true, it was a truly real thing that people would actually die for someone else, you know, and for something greater, even abstract, you know,
Shakespeare. Absolutely. You know, I mean, when you were watching that show, that part where they're coming up on the beach and everything, mm-hmm. You can't help but to say, man, that was men of men right there. You know, mm-hmm. I completely get that. Doesn't sound cheesy to me, man. I completely get that.
Yeah. I mean, the stakes were, I mean, enormously high. I mean, we know that now, right? Yeah. And then after that, I've always been fascinated with, you know, healthcare just in general. Because it just seemed like in my mind, some part of me was like prepping for like doomsday situation, you know? And I was like, you know, what's always useful? Medical care.
Yep.
You're right. Never going out of style. I'm always going to have a job. That's why I told myself there's so many things, you know, that are abbreviated in their longevity by technology. You know, they lose their purpose, you know, but medical care, you know, you might need that when you don't have any of that stuff. And then you have to improvise. And I just thought it was, I wanted to be prepared.
Yeah. No, I get that, man. You know, I kind of wish I would have went into like the medical field instead of being a mechanic, because you can always learn how to fix things, but it is tough as hell when there's no books, no internet, no more, and doomsday type situation to say, oh, now's a good time to learn medical care.
Yeah.
You'll be struggling.
Because like you might be able to fix an engine with other parts, but that human's not coming back alive, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're done with. So yeah, it was intervention learning. I've worked as an EMT, a 911 dispatcher also.
Okay.
But joining the Navy, I was going to join the Marine Corps first, but then I wanted to be a medic, and I didn't realize. It's a recruiter. Unfortunately, the recruiter was trying to trick me, and which sucks because I know that now. But he was like, "Oh, well, you could do the medic thing later. It will get you." And I would have been in the wrong branch. Yeah. You know. So I ended up dropping out of that situation and immediately enlisting into the Navy instead as a corpsman. And it's like, you can't, he's a Marine. You can't be mad at me because I'm still going to be doing the job and hanging out with you, you know, doing this. So, you know, I the contempt would make no sense. And anyway, I started to, after boot camp and A school, I went to my first duty station, Naval Air Station, Jacksonville, Florida. I'll tell you why. The most important reason to me was that I had been living in -40-degree weather for too long. I'm from South Texas. I couldn't handle it anymore. I hated it. It was so cold. I hated it so much. I've never been cold in my life. Never been.
I'm not too far from Jacksonville. My family's living out there in Jessup, Georgia by Brunswick. So about 40, 50 miles north of the Florida line. So,
yeah. It's funny. I only went to Georgia one time, and it was for something we were doing some triage combat casualty care thing. We were doing some kind of thing, and we went to like some naval, like some kind of port or something. I don't even remember what it was, but I didn't really get to go anywhere else in Georgia. But I've always wanted to. It sounds like a beautiful place.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan, man. But it's too damn hot for me.
Yeah.
I'm fat, so I like it cold, man.
I was sick of it. I couldn't do the cold anymore. I have Tourette's, y'all. I don't know if you know. If anyone doesn't know, and you're gonna hear me say Shakespeare, because that's what tick I have, which is fortuitous because it could be worse. Just it could be worse, and it's something. It often is, but right now it's just Shakespeare. It's just Shakespeare. I wanted to. It rained every day at 4 o'clock in Florida. It rains every day. 4 o'clock. Almost on the dot. It's like oh, Jesus turns on the little sprinklers.
Yep.
the water in the lawn.
And anyway. It never fails. You're like, the humidity should go down. It's raining and the humidity's going up. It's crazy.
It's worse. You're dealing with like fog that's got a fog with a vengeance.
Yeah.
You know? Fog, yeah.
I never thought of it that way, but yeah, you are absolutely right.
Yeah.
So you how long were you in the Navy?
I was in it like for about a year and a half because I had developed Tourette's, and it was something like a seizure. And you're not deployable anymore.
Okay.
And what they would have done, I would have been on duty roster for the rest of my service. I would have been mopping floors, cleaning bathrooms. And I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah,
I'm ready. I'm happy to serve my country, but in a way that I feel is consequential. Which, you know, I thought that being a corpsman reflected that desire. But anyway, Shakespeare. It was really, honestly, a lot could happen in that time though. It was really sometimes some of it was really fun, some of it was really rough. I lost a shipmate, and that was really hard. I lost them to suicide. That was hard, and I still think about them, you know. And it's LS1 Tom Murphy.
I'm gonna tell you, as veterans, we have I think we waited too long to take matters into our own hand, and we relied on the VA and everything else to stop this. And we finally have started coming together as a community to bring that kind of awareness. It's tough, man. What, did he just get out of the military when it happened, or was he still in?
He was still in. We were Shakespeare. The circumstances of like what led him emotionally that night for that, but I don't know, and I don't want to speculate either. What I know is that 10 days before that, it was Christmas leave, So we went home on Christmas leave, and right before I left, he got the whole department together, and he said we should do a suicide briefing and discuss how it increases over the holidays. And that briefing did not go well. And last time I talked about this, it was with another veteran, and he was saying that we have a grim sense of humor that you have to develop. And that's kind of what happened. There was a lack of seriousness to like manage it emotionally, I think.
Yeah.
And, he 10 days later, he died 10 days later. I found out when I got back from Christmas leave, it was my first day back. The duty driver picked me up from the barracks. He was driving me to the hospital. I was alone with him. And he says, "You know, an LS1 Tom Murphy?" I was like, "Yeah, that's my LPO. He's leading petty officer." "Why?" And he said, "Yeah, he killed himself last night."
Oh my God.
And I was like, "I'm sorry. Wait, what?" And I was in shock. I went in shock, like straight up. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who knew, you know, because nobody called me.
Right. Know?
And I know my chief didn't call me. And he had to break the news to us that Shakespeare. He had to break the news to us that morning. And
man.
That's
one job in the Army I never wanted, was to be a notification officer. You know, there's just no, I don't think I could have done it. You know, yep. Even today, just hearing taps, you know, I start crying. And it's because I've done so many military funerals, and it's brutal, man. And it's tough because you don't never know what people are dealing with. And, and since I started podcasting, I have learned, you know, a lot more about it. I always thought this was an American veteran problem. You know, I never thought about, did other countries have the same thing about their soldiers killing themselves and stuff. And I had a British veteran on, and they've got the same exact problem over there.
I did not know that.
And I didn't know it till the end of the podcast. He just told me about his podcast, and it was mostly about suicide awareness, because they've got too many veterans that are killing themselves. And it like made me really think about this in a whole nother way. You know, like, I wonder if our enemies, you know, are having these problems. Is this,
oh, absolutely.
You know, it just, it makes you never thought about it past your own branch, your own little community. And
I think the veterans are a lot more sensitive to the notions of honor.
Yeah,
you know, just in general, like and if you feel like you're not living an honorable life, you more easily surrender to that. For example, like the fact that I didn't serve like my whole term, I've discussed this with a bunch of my friends that served overseas, that were deployed for several times, and they saw combat, and you know, like they cried with me and were like, I'm glad you didn't go, you know. You know, and I believed like I had done myself, like, even though it wasn't my fault and there's nothing I could do about it.
Yep.
They didn't want me to. Yeah, I still remember that night that I had that discussion.
And I've had people on the show that, you know, that said that they felt bad because they didn't deploy or whatever. And I completely get that, because before I deployed the first time, I was asking our regimental commander, "When is it our turn? When do we get to go?" And he said, "Watch what you wish for, because it might just happen." And fast forward many years later, 10, 12 years later, I was literally saying, "Man, when is it somebody else's turn?" You know, I was tired. And, you know, after seeing the casualties and what war really is, not what you think it is, you know, I tell people, man, be thankful you didn't go. There's no shame in not going, you know?
Yeah.
Are you ready to experience the power of military community right from the comfort of your living room? Introducing Military United Podcast Streams, now available on the Roku channel. Get ready to dive into a world of incredible stories, inspiring discussions, and the best entertainment the military community has to offer. With our veteran podcast host, you'll gain insights into the experiences that have shaped our heroes. And that's not all. We've got a lineup of talented veteran musicians playing rock, country, and more. Get ready to rock out with these incredible artists who have served our country and are now ready to entertain you with their soulful tunes. But wait, there's more. We've also got veteran comedians who will have you in stitches with their hilarious and relatable stories. Laughter is the best medicine, and these brave men and women know how to deliver it. So gather your loved ones, grab some popcorn, and prepare for an unforgettable journey into the world of military podcasts, music, and comedy. With Military United Podcast Streams, now on Roku, you can access all this incredible content with just a few clicks of a button. Military United Podcast Streams on Roku channel. It's time to honor, entertain, and celebrate the incredible men and women who have served our country. Join us today and experience the power of the military community like never before.
And so, yeah, it's brutal, man. So when you got out of the Navy, man, where did that lead you? Did that lead you into your career as a journalist, or?
Yeah, so some of my buddies in the Navy, it's really weird, actually. I was doing the buddy program with my brother, Brashad, and we went to, like, he's my brother, but like adoptive. I was his family took me in because I grew up in a bad place. So they took me in, and he and I went to the Navy together, went to boot camp together. I found out our sister division, our brother division, we call it brother division, our brother div, there was a guy in there that lived five houses down from me back home.
No kidding.
Swear to God. He lived literally five houses down from me. We went to boot camp at the same time, unintentionally. And he was an older guy, too. He was older than me. But so, you know, it's not like we both graduated high school and went to, he was already graduated. And
yeah.
And we went together. Yeah, I've heard the same. It's kind of like boot camp reflects this. It's like, it says when they say Shakespeare, when he says it's like moments of sheer terror and just unendurable boredom.
Yeah,
and that's it. And that's just your whole. As a boot camp's a little bit like that too. It's really boring.
Yep.
It's a lot more boring than people think it is. It's a lot of waiting around because it's processing. You got to go to classes and all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the Army, man, it's, you know, when you were thought you had downtime to relax, that's when you were shining your boots and everything else. And then next thing you know, the daggone drill sergeants come in there and you're getting smoked and push-ups and everything else that's going on. And then it just dies and it's back to, now what do we do?
I remember when I was graduating, we were about to graduate boot camp. We got done that, and the RDC, that's right, the recruit division commander, he's like a drill sergeant for everybody that doesn't know. He you guys hear that?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. It's during, because I am surprised. Anyway, I'm sorry. The RDC told us to take a search for things under the bunks, which meant go to sleep, because you stay up all night. You stay up like two days.
Yeah. The first 40 hours or so of Army is the same way. I think it's intentional. You know, they intentionally keep you up to, I don't know, just to start the welcoming process of the green weenie that you're getting, but the Army does the same exact thing, man. So when you came out of the military and you,
oh yeah,
did you go a journalist
career? Yeah, we lost our turn. Anyway, that's distracting because they're doing a bunch of construction in the house for some reason. I don't even know what they're doing. I had friends in there that told me I could write. And so I picked that trade up. I started doing it. I started practicing on my own. And then I went to I tried to go to college. That didn't go over well.
Yeah,
really. I wasn't really into it. I wasn't really into it. It didn't seem like it was offering me much. And then I went to Shakespeare. I was 25 and I started to experience symptoms of Tourette's. And that's when I was working as I was living in Louisiana at the time. When I moved to Texas, I got a job as a 911 dispatcher. And then shortly after that, I was about 27 years old. I auditioned for a job at a newspaper back where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And I got the job. I ended up winning awards from the Texas Press Association and the South Texas Press Association. I taught myself to write, you know? And I didn't even the award that I won was for something called a feature writing. I had never written a feature before. In fact, my editor says, go write a feature on this guy. And I was like, okay, I had to look it up. I didn't tell her, I didn't know. So I went to look, I swear to God, I looked up a WikiHow article to figure out what I was doing. Shakespeare.
Hey, that's what veterans do, man. You know, we fake it till we make it.
Yeah. Shakespeare. So I ended up after that, and I won an award for photography for some coverage I did during Hurricane Harvey when it hit Texas. And you know what's funny is that there's a lot of consequence. There's more consequences than people think. People leave, for example, like the place where I grew up, it flooded like everywhere. And, you know, some people left their animals behind, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and you know what? Do you know what happens to a dog that's chained up? It can't swim for that long, y'all.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was a rough situation. But I won an award for that too. And then I kept on writing. I'd written short stories I hadn't started writing poetry yet. Most of the stuff I wrote was like, you know, stuff about. I'd have to recite it to you, and I'm not gonna do that. So anyway, but actually, when I was 23 years old, I'd written a short story when I was 22. Mm-hmm. The New Yorker actually they rejected it, but they actually told me my voice was quite compelling. Which I was. There's less than I think it's 3% of submissions they bother to even say anything to you about. Wow. Yeah. So I was encouraged by a lot of success in that sense. And then I ended up winning the two different colleges that I went to. I won their annual creative writing contest. I won both of them, all of them. I won all the categories. In fact, it was kind of funny. Yeah. So I went up, they said, they called my name for the poetry one. And I was like, oh no, did I win the poetry? Oh, I didn't want to win the poetry. I don't care about poetry. I wanted to write. I write short fiction. I wrote a short story about a guy that gets arrested. It's a whole thing. I liked it. But then they called my name again for the first place for that category too. And I was like, oh my God, it was wild. I did not expect that.
Yeah.
And then, at the other one too, it was that they had a magazine, annual magazine that was released. And so there's a lot of things that affirmed what I meant to do and what I hope to do. So I ended up doing well at the newspaper. But the thing is that developing Tourette's, it became much more injurious, wounding. Like Shakespeare. Sometimes I have to wear a helmet because I gouge my own eyes.
Oh wow!
And I jab my throat. I punch myself in the face. I've given myself black eyes, bloody lips.
Like, man,
I've made my eyes tear up because I hit myself in the nose, like directly on. I've smacked myself so hard in the ear that, you know, it's like it's really painful. In fact, when I was moving into an apartment, I have to tell people, like, just so you know, it's going to sound like someone's being tortured sometimes, but that's not what's happening. I have Tourette's.
Wow. Yeah. You know, I never even thought about stuff like that. I know, you know, and I don't know a lot about Tourette's. I know what I've seen, a few people that come out and talk about it on TikTok and stuff like that. So I know very, very little, about mm-hmm. Tourette's, but, I never thought about even, you know, stuff like that, where your neighbors think people are being tortured and stuff like that.
Yeah, because it's honestly it really, it's really awful for so many reasons. You know, because your symptom, like when you have all those different stuff, like OCD, anxiety, mm-hmm. depression, ADHD, and all that, the symptoms flirt with each other. Like they exacerbate one another often. And so managing is like, it has to be a comprehensive thing. You have to do all of the symptoms, you know, because you can't have a runaway situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I quit writing for 5 years because of that. I moved to Canada.
Have you ever wondered how you can help out the show? Well, that is very simple. You can help us out by going to www.twodrunkdudesinagunroom.com. That is www.twodrunkdudesinagunroom.com. There's many ways that you can help us: by listening to the show, supporting the show, liking, sharing, and everything else that comes along with social media. But one of our biggest goals is to help build the nonprofit Heroes Voice Media Foundation. This is a foundation that has decided to start celebrating courage and amplifying heroes. Find your voice with Heroes Voice Media Foundation.
With my, she's my ex now, but I'm a permanent resident here. So living in Canada, it was October 16th, 2021. And the work BC counselor told me that she couldn't find me work based on the criteria and based on like my condition and stuff. There was nothing I could do with it. So she said, maybe you should start writing again, because that's it. And yeah. So it was a do or die situation, you know, because I wanted to live a life of consequence. And so far I felt like I hadn't done that yet. Even though I'd done all that stuff, I still didn't, that wasn't enough for me. So nice. Yeah. So I, 10 minutes after hanging up that phone, I wrote my book, which is right here. Yeah. And I've also written a kid's book, which is quite cute. But... yeah. It's pretty neat, huh?
Yeah.
Pretty neat, the whole thing. Yeah. It's real cute. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, man, I've started writing. So I wrote a book for my family. I had, and until they read it, I hadn't decided whether I was going to publish it or not. But, you know, my kids went through shitty times during their pubic years, because that's when PTSD was really affecting me. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, they seen me from before and after deployments. And I never talked about anything that had happened, what was going on, my mental state. I didn't talk about any of that stuff with them. It was always, I'm fine, you know. But for 2 years, my wife didn't sleep in the same bed with me, because she woke up with black eyes and stuff that. And so she knew, but the kids didn't. And so I wrote a book for them explaining all that stuff. And, you know, I left it up to them. They want me to go ahead and publish it. So I'm now in that process of polishing it up and everything else. But it's nowhere near as thick as that book. And, you know, I've started my first fiction book because I enjoyed writing that book more than I thought I would. So I've started a second one. And I do understand how hard that is. And so to see a book that thick, man, I don't know.
Yeah, it's 225,000 words, which is as long as East of Eden.
Yeah.
So people that don't know, The Hobbit's 98,000, if that's a helpful measure, because a lot of people read that and they know about how long it is. Yeah. Yep. It's a long, 225,000 is a lot of work. It's an extraordinary amount to rewrite.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I can't even imagine. Well, like I said, I think I'm at like 44,000 on my book that I wrote for the kids. So yeah. I'm nowhere even near where any of those books are. And it's tough, man. You know, a lot are going back, because you probably reread that book 15 times as you're going back through and cleaning it up and editing mm-hmm. it and all that stuff. So mm-hmm. people don't understand, and I didn't understand until the first time I did it, how much work really goes into, and it's not like any other job either, man, where, you know, I alarm clock goes off, I get up, brush my teeth and go to work, and I perform my work. You have to be in the right mental state, the mindset, you know, otherwise you're just going to put out trash.
Yeah, it's a very careful and deliberate process.
Yep, it is. So my hat's off, man. Well, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about that book, man? No?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I will. It's about a lot of stuff. It's about so much. It's about empire. It's got slavery. It's got pirates. It has civil wars, like between different countries. There's a paradise in there. There's giants. There's all kinds of stuff. I try to be rather comprehensive in many senses. So,
yeah, I'm going to have to order it, man. I'm going to have to order it and start the process of reading it. Cause I need to go to paradise for one. I definitely need to go there. Cause I'm working in hell right now. So,
yeah. Well, it's one of those things, like there is a paradise, but it's supposed to be an allegory for, like, you know, the way that, like, cause right. Like it's a financial situation. Like we got the way that, you know, the money is in the older generations right now. Yep. Like everybody's retiring. Yep. And, you know, a lot of the people like myself, the young people are trying to figure out how they're going to make something like make enough money to retire themselves. And that's what it's an allegory for. Like they, like that paradise is the way that it's designed is to allude to that notion.
No. Okay. Well, where did you get the inspiration for this?
I've never really had a trouble generating my own sort of stuff. If I was influenced by anything, it was Charles Dickens, by his style, because his style in a way, Shakespeare. Yeah. I do a great deal of work, but I read about the first half of Oliver Twist.
Okay. You know, I had a guy on, and it's always funny, man, how you hear where the inspirations come from. And I probably, as long as I podcast, I'll never forget this story. But his writing genre is comedy horror, which is like two things already that don't even seem like they go together. But he wrote a book. Because he didn't like 50 Shades of Grey. He said that was garbage, that was making a lot of money for nothing. Mm-hmm. And so his wife dared him to write a book. And he said, well, if that's what sells, anything will sell. So he wrote a book about zombies. Operation Encore is a 501c nonprofit that is helping veterans turn into rock stars every single day. You can learn more about what Operation Encore is doing by going over to their website at www.operationencore.org. That is www.operationencore.org. If you can give them a hand, just click that little donate button or follow all of their social medias and learn exactly what they are doing to change the lives of our veterans every single day. That are taking over the world and primarily the interstate, and everybody was frustrated. And a guy went home to have sex with his girlfriend who had turned. She bit him. He knew he was going to turn and he didn't want to live no more. So he went to the CVS, broke in and tried to take a whole bunch of pills and accidentally took a bunch of Viagra and discovered that as long as he was hard, the blood flow stopped him from turning into a zombie. And I'm like, where do you even come up with stuff like this? You know, but it was his style. And it definitely had me curious, man, because I thought it was pretty hilarious where that story had gone to.
Mm-hmm. I think about that a lot. I think the most important variable is in any story is the characters. And if you're married enough to close enough to reality, that it's not, you're not going to pervert reality, you know, and, it's, and you're not going to make the story difficult to follow. And then eventually it can write itself in many senses.
That makes sense. You know, so I just started writing for a magazine called Addie's Veteran Magazine. And I don't have a big section. It's, you know, 700 to 1,000 words. And I mostly talk about how media has been used as therapy. And so I try to highlight some veterans and that are using media. You know, I've started a radio station for veterans that are playing music and trying to get known. I've got a program with our nonprofit for authors and bloggers. And I've got one for podcasters. And so I kind of write about how podcasting helped me and everything else. But I watch these veterans that are writing and going through the process. And what I've discovered is most of them have no issues with getting the content out. It's the after, what do I do when it's done? And that's where they struggle. You know, how do I get it published? How is the editing? What do I got to look for? You know? And so that's where I kind of decided, hey, you know, we need to do something to help these guys that serve their country and then want to pursue a career later. And that's where our nonprofit came from. Did you find that hard too, as far as the publishing side, or do you self-publish?
No, honestly, I've self-published because there used to be the big five, right? Mm-hmm. Simon & Schuster, HarperCollins, and the other three, I don't remember the name. I felt like they were gatekeeping, and that's why they have been deteriorating, decaying in many senses, and losing their influence in that sense.
So do you feel the same way about as far as like the news for journalists and stuff like that too? Do you think podcasting and stuff like that are kind of taking a share of that?
No, because people can make their own content.
Yeah.
And they can generate their own understanding of what's going on and find an audience that that agrees with the very like nuanced views.
Yep. Oh yeah, absolutely. And the other thing too I like about it is you know, podcasters aren't limited to, well, you get 10 minutes to tell this story. And so you tell the side that's going to sell and you get as much content in as you can in the 10 minutes. And to where podcasters, you know, I could podcast for 3 hours if I wanted to, you know, probably have no listeners by the time it's over with, but, you know, it could be done. And so I think that's another benefit that people can get more of the story to make a decision for themselves on whether or not they believe it, don't believe it. Whatever.
No, that's true. Yeah. It's true. Like, and often I encourage anyone to investigate stuff for themselves and to think critically, right?
Yeah.
And to concede, like, if they're wrong, you gotta say you're wrong. But if you're right, stick to that. You know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah.
So if you had to think back to all the stories you cover, man, is there anyone that any story that sticks out, something that was funny or touching or?
Yeah. Honestly, the story that I did about the feature that was Ray Yannick was that's the one that I won an award for. That guy actually had some, I think it was a neurological condition. And so now that I have a neurological, Shakespeare, now that I have a neurological condition in terms like it's disabling, I understand him better, and I would rewrite it now, I really enjoyed that story. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely, man. And I think that becomes important is one you can relate. You know, I think that's why a lot of people have an issue with the VA therapists, because a lot of times they can't relate to the stories, and so it's important for the audience to be able to relate to it, as well as I think the person writing it. So it makes sense that you would actually want to go back and relook at what you did. That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this, man. When you're what was it that made you go from a journalist to a writer, or are you still doing journalist work?
I don't do any journalism now because I was never really like, I don't like it's too rigid.
Yeah. Anyway,
I wanted to write fiction because it really like epic fantasy, for example, is the genre my work's in. Mm-hmm. It really lends itself to being like, you can do anything you want. You know, you can impart, and you don't have to, you can allude to things without being direct. Yeah. And so like you're not operating against that human prejudice. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's yep. So it was helpful. It's helpful in that sense. Right?
And I think that's also another reason why probably your readers are into that, because it puts them in a place that they're not currently in, whether it be a better place, different place, whatever. They're not dealing with what's going on now. They're reading and can picture and be wherever, like you said, you know, a land full of giants.
Yeah, no, truly. Yeah, the paradise that I was referring to earlier, that's where all the giants live. And there's normal sized people. There's humans there too. But it's an interesting. There's a lot of if you've seen Game of Thrones or watched or read the books, they have the first three chapters are like different places with different people, different parts of the world, and yep. then you learn how those three stories are connected. I did the same thing with my book. It's structured very similarly in that sense. Because I felt like a three is a great amount to work with, and you can branch out from there, and it remains coherent enough. And limited, though, limited is an important quality, because you overwhelm the reader, then you sort of like, it's like you can only fill the pool up so much before it starts spilling over.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know that I could even do that, because the book that the fiction book that I'm writing it's a military related. But I'm very descriptive. You know, I'm one of those guys that when I'm writing, I want you to know the hair color, how big the guy is, and everything. So if I started bringing in multiple countries and a whole bunch of characters that are going to be talked about several times, it would become very difficult for me to keep my facts straight, you know, for the outline that I set for that person. You know, each of the veterans that... So the synopsis of what my book's about is it's about a group of guys that are working with a nonprofit for human trafficking, but they each have their own mission of why they're there. One of them used to work for the CIA and got kicked out because he discovered something that he wasn't supposed to see. And so he's trying to figure out what had happened and why this was going on. And what it was that he found was that the government had been funding the Taliban to keep the war going so they could keep the war machine going. And so that's what he's trying to discover, you know, who was behind this, what departments, because they labeled him as, you know, having PTSD and mental illness and kicked him out. So, and each of those characters have their own story, you know, all the way down to the girl that's in it. Her sister was human trafficked, and now she's trying to figure out where her sister is and so forth. So, you know, I find myself picturing the characters like I'm talking to them, man. And, you know, when I start picturing this conversation, I kind of start picturing what they look like. And that's what I start writing about. And so I didn't even know that was a writing style until I started learning a little bit more. But I don't know that I could do like three countries, and I'd have to keep it very limited. I have a very small mind, so I'd forget their names.
Yeah, it's a lot of, you know, repetition, right? That's how you develop so many things. But like I would, when I tell people, people remark like that, you know, if you're eloquent, I would say it's 70% of it's going to come from practice. You writing 30% comes from, you know, conversation, actually. Yep. You get a lot better practice from writing, because you see those words over and over again, using a thesaurus.
Yep.
They like the one, they're all connected, you know, like they're, you know, it's really interesting. You can go down a rabbit hole of words. When you see a word, like for me, when I see a word, I see the personality of the word, the personality of the word within the context of our society. I see how I think of like regionally. And there's so many reasons. I love it. I love writing.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it too, man. I really am. So let me ask you this. I know it's a big topic right now. Everybody's talking about it, and some are afraid of it, some are not. But What is your thoughts on AI in the writing world? Do you see that fear that, I mean, I don't personally see AI ever being to the point where they're going to be able to, it'll completely take over. I see it becoming a tool for writers, but not creating its own content and selling it. You know, maybe it's just because we're not there yet, but you can tell when somebody's using AI by the word choice, the layout and stuff like that. Unless they really know what they're doing. But so what's your thoughts on AI?
I think that it starts as a tool.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that's going to, we're going to build it and we're not realizing as we use it and as we're building something else, it's going to run away from us after a certain point. The thing is that it's going to, I feel like it's going to concentrate a lot of power because it's going, how, think about undermining an AI after like authority and all that stuff has already been established.
Yeah.
Like, think about that. Like, there's, I mean, it can tell you within a second, you know, historically, this is where this area is like this. It floods in this place. So if you position troops here during the spring, you can make them come here and then like they're going to get flooded and they're not going to be able to stay there. And then it's going to mess up their positioning and their targeting and all this. There's a storm. The humidity is this. So that means this. You know, all of these variables, how do you undermine that?
That'd be really tough. You know, yeah. I had a guy on and he had an interesting take on it. I didn't even respect the way that he talked because he was all about AI, but I asked him, I said, you know, what is your real thoughts? Where does this go? And he said, to be honest, he said, social media has separated everybody. Now we're talking strictly on computers. There's no face-to-face conversations anymore. He said, AI is going to get so advanced and so good that people will eventually move away from the screen talking because they're not going to be sure if the person they're talking to is even real unless they can touch them.
Yeah, the Turing test.
So he thinks that AI will actually bring people more back to the way it was prior to that. People are going to leave the computer and everything so they can know that what they're talking to is real. And I never thought about that. I didn't expect somebody that, you know, uses AI and for his living would have that kind of take.
I think that is a very optimistic view, and I hope they're right. I hope they're right. But what I see is that it will become limited in use for everybody else, and it will explode in use for the few. Absolutely. And they're going to have a much more advanced version of an AI, for example. And we're not going to be able to, I mean, think about all the resources that the billions of dollars that they have to pour into like developing each one. Like, it's an extraordinary amount of money. No one on earth, except for the people who would benefit from that system, has that kind of money.
Yep.
And so I'm not optimistic, but on the other hand, you could use AI to correct a lot of things that are wrong right now that we might be dealing with in 50 years, you know, which is, I think that's going to be a more helpful, it actually might be in many ways. I think it'll serve us, but I think that ultimately it's always going to be a storm cloud above it. Always. At any moment it could be, you know.
You know, the internet was that same way. You know, the internet was a great idea, but now it's, you know, toxic for some people. You know, kids are becoming victimized and everything else. And we have all this knowledge and 90% of the people don't use the internet to learn knowledge. They use it for themselves.
Yeah. You know, memes.
Yeah. Memes and porn and anything else that, brings, the quick, happiness, I guess. But
some of that stuff is always going to be there though.
Well,
it's always been there.
Yeah.
We just weren't, you know, like we just weren't able to share it so readily.
Yeah. That's all the internet did is it expedited it. You know,
I saw this thing about this. It was a meme. It was the first meme. It was like from 1920 or something. It said like something like what you look like and it had a guy dress up like, and he didn't look great. And then it said what you think you look like, and it drew him, and it drew him very like obviously very well dressed, and and that's a meme. That's a meme.
Yep,
yeah, and the first is I don't know if it's the first, but there's plenty of it's yeah. I agree that the internet also was a in a way it sort of created a worldwide AI. Like we were all be able to pool our notions together and develop these sort of clusters of thought. Like you have Facebook, Instagram, you know, Snapchat, and God, I can go on Reddit. You know, there's so many different sites that that generate a different kind of personality and then attract different personalities.
You are right.
Based on the forums, like Reddit is one that there's a lot of big blocks of text. So people that like to read use that one. They like to talk a lot on that one. You know, Twitter's like everyone's just trying to be clever in 150 characters, right?
Yep.
And then you got like, you know, Facebook, everyone's trying to show that they have the greatest life ever. Instagram is the same thing. But I use TikTok and Instagram. But I don't like social media either.
Yeah.
I use it. So I try to use it in the most wholesome way I can. Yep. Like today I made a video. There's a character in my book named Withers.
Mm-hmm.
In real life, there's a doctor, a physician, who started this program in the United States called Street Medicine, and he performs like physician's care, like out, like for people that don't have homes, you know, like he takes care of veterans, he takes care of everybody, all the unhoused. He would provide care for them, like it's because they're suspicious of hospitals and stuff like that, and rightfully so. He's actually been arrested because they thought the police like accused him of vagrancy, you know, like he got arrested alongside with him, and this guy is an extraordinary guy. And so I made a video saying because I finally had enough money to send him a copy of my book and tell him who he is to me, and what I've named the character I named after him and everything. And Amazon told me that it arrived today. So I made the video saying, okay, Dr. Jim Withers, if you see this, just so you know, this is real. And I'm very grateful for the work you've done.
That is awesome, man. No. And it's amazing that you're, you know, and people aren't even going to understand that, you know, but you know it, you know, when they read your book, unless they see that video or they see this podcast, that, you know, you were inspired by a character, by somebody else that just was giving back. And I think that's amazing, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to talk about veterans and talk about Tourette's and, you know, just, I don't like to produce nonsense.
Yep.
You know, like I'm not dancing. And I'm not singing.
Nope.
I do my work. Yeah, I do my work. I got to have my dignity, you know?
Yep.
And I'm also too old to be doing that. I'm 34.
Yep. You know? I'm 49, so, man, I get it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I definitely, about the only dance I could probably do is the truffle shuffle from Goonies, you know?
Oh, my God.
How bad I am. I mean, I'm 6'1", almost 300 pounds, so. You know, I think it's amazing because a lot of people don't understand by just giving back, that's therapy in itself.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Therapeutic. And so I think media, you know, all media has a way to play, you know, mm-hmm. Somebody's having a bad day. They can go through your book and be in a place for a time that they don't have to stress about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If they read my book, they'll probably want their money back. But
you know, it's really important, I think, to establish it. For me, writing is about, you ever John Steinbeck, Grapes of Wrath, Mice and Men, East of Eden,
of Mice and Flap.
Yeah, an extraordinary writer, one of the greatest American writers ever. He said his whole mission as a writer is to help people understand one another. That's my philosophy too. And it informs everything I do. Like all the stories that I write, like I got this one in my book. I got one where this kid, it's just a short story. It's only a couple paragraphs, but I think it's pretty compelling. The kid, right before a battle, He's trying to do drugs at the bottom of the ship, and he ends up accidentally setting off an explosion. He makes himself deaf, completely deaf. He blows out his eardrums. He can't hear, and he kills somebody in the next compartment.
Oh wow!
He's going to stand trial. He can't read, so he doesn't know what's going on. He has no idea what the judges are saying. He has no idea what the military tribunal is saying. Like, he has no idea what everyone, like the prosecutor and all that stuff. He's completely on his own. He's searching everyone's face for like some measure of mercy or compassion. They have nothing but contempt.
Yeah.
And wow. Yeah. That's just one short story. That's just one little one. And they're all like that. They're wow. all like that.
Yeah, man. Well, brother, why don't you tell everybody where they can get the book and if you got any links or social media that you want people to come visit, man, now's your time to sell yourself, brother.
Shakespeare. You're actually able to, I'm at this point, I've been cash because I went viral on TikTok a couple times. I've sold like 1,300 copies of my book about. And Shakespeare. And so if you type in my name, Christoph Morrow, which is there, the little thing, you can actually, my picture pops up like at the top. It says like author, like Google knows who I am now. Like I still keep thinking about that. I'm not anonymous anymore. I'll never be anonymous again. How am I going to take down Google? There's nothing I can do. They know. They got me pegged. I have a friend. Actually, I'm funny. I had a friend. He's in the Space Force. One of the eight. Like, there's only 8,000 people in all of the Space Force. I have a buddy in the Space Force, and he said, I wouldn't make you anonymous. I would make you somebody else. I was like, whoa, what? Wait a minute. He's like, yeah, someone that's committed crimes and things like that, and they would have an interest in you. I'm like, oh my god, that is so genius.
Yeah,
that is so diabolical. Yeah. Yeah, so if you look up Christoph Morrow, you look up Christoph Morrow, you'll find me. Yeah, right. I'm on TikTok and Instagram mostly. But if you message me or write, I will write you back. That's just the way I am.
That's awesome, man. Mm-hmm. All right, brother. I'm gonna put you in the green room real quick. Throw the exit mm-hmm. up, and I'll be with you in 1 second. All right.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. All right, man. Man, you know, I love talking to authors because you learn so much, especially veterans. I think we have an amazing view on things, whether it be that dark sense of humor or just an amazing imagination. So you never know what you're going to get from veterans. And I think that is a very important characteristic of us. And I love talking to authors and learning where they came up with their books, you know, the ideas. And I just love content creation, man. So I hope y'all enjoyed it. I hope you do like me and you go and get that book. I definitely am going to walk among giants and I will read that book. So I want you guys to do the same. Y'all take care, be safe, and always we'll see you next week.